This is America's Sports Talk Show, Sports Byline USA. Here's Ron Barr.
Ronald A. Smith has joined us on Sports Byline. Again, I urge you to check out his book. It's called Pay for Play, A History of Big-Time College Athletic Reform. Ronald, before the break, I mentioned about the NCAA. You touched on it briefly. Tell everybody how it came about and what it actually does.
Well, the creation of the National Collegiate Athletic Association came completely because of one football season, and that was the football season in the fall of 1905, when there were a number of injuries and a whole lot of questions about the morality of football. And it arose when a football player from Union College was killed or died in a tackle and with a hemorrhage. And one thinks of today the problems that we're having with helmets and the number of injuries there and the trauma to the head. But in 1905, it was that accident in a game, a relatively unimportant game between New York University and Union College, when this back made a tackle and died after it. And they asked the most important president of any university in America, probably in American history, Charles Eliot at Harvard University, if he would take charge of a reform movement to see if they could make this a less dangerous game. And Eliot refused, saying presidents can't reform intercollegiate athletics. And I happen to agree with that. They couldn't then and they can't now. But he declined heading up a reform movement, so the New York University president said, I will do it. He set up a small group to see if they should reform or ban football. This group decided to reform it, and he then asked every university that had college football to meet in New York City. And at the end of December 1905, the NCAA doesn't quite have this right. They think it started in 1906. But at the end of December 1905, these schools met and created what became the National Collegiate Athletic Association. And it was only for the first almost 50 years of it a debating society. They passed no reform rules, nothing, except they did reform football rules at first and then took on all the rest of the rules of how do you play a basketball game, how do you play a lacrosse game, how do you run track for the first 50 years. And then right after World War II, they just said, we better do something about scholarships and recruiting. And then that was the first passage of anything by the National Collegiate Athletic Association. And at the same time, very close there, they said, we have to control television because television could ruin football because people would stay home to watch the game rather than coming to the contest. And so those are the first two things, passage of eligibility rules in recruiting and control of television. Since then, NCAA has many, many controls on the number of coaches they can have, for instance, and a whole range of rules that have come through, including eligibility rules.
When I take a look at college athletics today and the effort and what we're talking here about athletic reform, it appears to me that the NCAA today is ill-prepared to be able to deal with any type of reform at all. And I say that because if I'm not mistaken, the NCAA is made up of the member schools, the presidents, and the chancellors. And aren't we talking about academic people that really don't know about the real world of big-time money and big-time money in athletics?
Well, Ron, I might argue a little bit there with you. It's the NCAA, in fact, may not be able to reform intercollegiate athletics, in part because individual presidents who run the NCAA basically are cheerleaders for their own institution, not reformers. And so they want to reform everybody else, but they don't want to reform their own institution. And so they have all of these good sayings that we would like to do this, we would like to do that, we would like to raise eligibility standards. But in fact, they don't want to do it at their own institution, and they have something which I call presidential admits into the university. Every major university in America, including Stanford out in your area, Penn State here, Alabama, Auburn, all of them allow presidential admits, people that couldn't ordinarily get into their institution, but they need them for especially basketball and football. And so at Stanford, for instance, there might be a 300-point difference between the average student body and the average SAT score of their football and basketball players. And that's true whether it's Notre Dame or Stanford or Penn State. There's a huge difference. So you ask the question, can the NCAA reform intercollegiate athletics? Maybe, maybe not. But if it gets really bad, where you're going to find the reform of intercollegiate athletics is either by the federal legislature, Congress, or by the courts. And the courts, as you may know, reformed intercollegiate sports for women by the passage of Title IX in 1972. And legislation has come on various things, including civil rights and allowing blacks to come into sports as well as other blacks coming into other areas of higher education. So courts and the legislature may be the best place for reform if the presidents and the NCAA choose not to do it.
By the way, I agree with you with your analysis of the fact that they want to see reform, but they don't want to do it at their own school. But I also think, and if I'm wrong, correct me on this, that I think that they're in conflict, because while these presidents, and I've said this on the air, and it may not be fair, I said they don't know if the ball's stuffed or blown up, while they talk about reform and doing these sort of things, they also want to be able to get money from their alums, not only for their athletic programs, but for the university overall. And if somebody tried to reform college athletics or even their own school, and the school went from being a team that won 10 or 11 games and went to a bowl and had a shot at the national championship, but because they did and didn't get the same caliber of athlete, that all of a sudden they dropped down to being a, say, a 6-6 team, no university president would do that. The other thing is that I found that these university presidents love flying on the people who give them the money, their corporate jets going off and watching their football team play somewhere around the country.
I think you have it absolutely correct, Ron. That is a major problem. The presidents are caught in between commercialism, which they need to run the program and to satisfy those alumni and other people in their community, for instance, states or at Notre Dame, maybe the Catholic religion. They're caught in between the commercialism and then having athletes be really students. And I think you have it right.
Are the presidents, and I don't want to come down too hard on them, but I don't think they're equipped, as I said, to deal in the commercial world of big-time college athletics. I mean, are they not pimping out their sports if they allow, say, their football game to be moved to 11 o'clock in the morning because it's going to be televised by ESPN or any of the other broadcast networks? I mean, if you give in on things like that because it's money that's coming in, I don't see where you can have any moral backbone to be able to make the tough decisions.
And I think you have it right there. ESPN was terrific for the commercialization of college and other sports. But ESPN has and would do it every minute of the day, all days of the week, if they could. And they are moving in that direction so that there are basketball games televised every night of the week, many afternoons during the week. And they would love to move football games to all days of the week and are essentially doing that, especially of the second rank of the big-time schools. If you notice, those are the ones that get on Thursday night football, the second-rate schools that don't get the image, like a Notre Dame that can get on almost any time, or a Penn State or Alabama, or this year Auburn. So I think you're right that they are caught in between commercialism and doing what they know is right. And that's the problem that we have. That's why it may not be that presidents really can reform intercollegiate athletics.
In about 30 seconds before we break, Ronald, is this a dangerous precedent with the University of Texas having their own television network and, of course, Notre Dame having their network and everything?
I just think it's in addition to the commercialism that we've seen. You probably know that the Big Ten was the first one to have its own network, and that because it's been so successful financially, bringing in millions of dollars to every school. Even the institution that I went to in the Big Ten, Northwestern, which is on the lowest level of bringing in money, it does very well by the Big Ten network. And the SEC will do the same, and Texas knows that it is the most important school in Texas with great football tradition, and it can have its own network, and it will do very well with that network, and so it just raises the bar for commercialism.
Ronald Smith is with us. We're talking about his book, Pay for Play, A History of Big-Time College Athletic Reform, as we continue on Sports Byline.